Paul represents somebody who knew Vincent well, spent time in this place. Gabe represents somebody who discovered Vincent quite by accident and came to Gloucester to look for him and Charles Olson, and discovered all of you. So I think it's just a wonderful circle this evening, and I'm happy that this space exists for stuff like this to happen, and that there's so many denizens of the deep here. Gabe's going to go first. He comes from New Bedford. He's wearing his Moby Dick shirt to just make sure everybody knows that he's from that place. He came to Gloucester to come to the library. Had heard about the library, and Judith called me up and said, "There's this guy coming. I don't know anything about him, but he wants to check out the library." So I wanted to check him out as well. So I went over there, and it was just delightful to meet Gabe and to just be part of his enthusiasm for these writers that are so close to us. So he's going to lay on he's going to give you a taste of his stuff. So Gabe, come on up, man. Do your thing. He's not going to read all of that. You never know. Passing your seat belts.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So, I think I should read. I'll read a wide variety of things. I'll read some haiku inspired poems. I'll read long poems. I'll read poems to Olson, Farini, and so yeah. And I'll just see where it goes. I'll sing. I'll do it. Okay. So we'll do this first. I really like this. A few of you have heard me say this poem, but it's very nice, and you should try to remember it. So, the law locks up the man or woman who stole the goose from the common, but lets the greater villain loose who stole the common from the goose. Okay, and now I'll sing you a little song. This is called Moscow Nights, and you probably know the tune, but this is a parasong by a fug named Thule Kupferberg. So, through the years of hope and fears, we all have seen old comrades disappear. How sad have we been? Different czars will come, but different czars will go. And my darling, I still love you so. There's unity still. Material might make you lose sight of what comes up undivided. Biologically incorrect. PC stands for police car. Watch out! Okay, this is about food. A lot of my poems will be about food. And so I think Paul will dig that. So this one's called Consumed. The food's poisoned with the slow kind, so we continue to buy the con we eat, FDA. This is a spam can society where dead men get mail continually fishing for money. Outrageous people. We pay for fucking water? What about the statelessness of nature, shifting sun-shined leaves? This one's for Charlie O. Not into slavery reform or CIA restructuring or getting liars to tell the truth. It's a waste, and there's enough of that already all over. And this is a little song called Running on Repeat, and it has nothing to do with Lester Young. Running on Repeat. If there's going to be a prez, it don't matter who's running, because the job of the prez is to keep on running. The wars and the rich, the show of the sick, the bombs drop so quick. Running with the thugs, the banks and think tanks. Running the drugs, running the prisons, running the guns, running Copper Street. Running what we eat, running what you watch, running where we sleep. Running our life into artificial death, running the pollution clogging up the breath. So let them run away and try and find the ways to be freely. I'm going to read a poem by Diane De Prima. Really important person to me. I've never met her, but I communicate with her. And this one is Memorial Day 2003. Today is Memorial Day. Take time to remember those brave souls who gave their lives for freedom, dear Abby. Remember Sacco and Vanzetti. Remember Haymarket. Remember John Brown. Remember the slave revolts. Remember Malcolm. Remember Paracelsus. Remember Huey and Little Bobby Hutton. Remember Crazy Horse and Chief Joseph. Remember Ma Doc and the Algonquin Nation. Remember Patrice Lumumba. Remember the dream of Africa. Remember Tina Modotti. Remember Mayakovsky. Yes, goddammit, even remember Trotsky. Hey, do you remember Hypatia? Socrates? Giordano Bruno? My buddy Esclarmonde de Fuchs? Remember Seton, the cosmopolitan? Remember Edward Kelly, the alchemist murdered in prison? Remember to take your life back into your hands. It's Memorial Day. Remember what you love and do it. Don't wait. Remember life hangs by a thread. Anybody's life. Then remember the poets Shelley and Bob Kaufman. Remember Van Gogh and Pollock. Remember Amelia Earhart. Remember it's not a safe time and more the reason to do wholeheartedly what you have to do. Remember the men and women of Wounded Knee. Kent State. Remember where you stand in the midst of empire and the Huns are coming. Remember Max Jacob, Apollinaire, Su-Ra-Wa-Di. Remember that all you need to remember is what you love. Remember to marry the world. What's is anybody in the mood for a certain thing? Long poem, a haiku, prose, anybody?
We'll do some prose.
Okay, this I'll do that. Okay, this one's called Front Page. The media is propaganda for the state, Rosemary. Imagine this. It's before noon and there's a knock at the door. A forceful knock. Not meant to sound like a cop knock, but you know, it just happens that way. It can't be hidden. It's an odd knock. You open up, sun's blaring in your face, and it's a police publicity stunt. The newspapers are there, snapping photos, and there's a cop handing you a summons, you could say, to be involved in a party thrown by the police in your neighborhood with a cool urban name, fucking lame, on the flyer. It's called Rock the Block. Well, that actually happened to a woman in Greensboro, NCUSSA, this week, and I saw it on the newsstands this evening buying water at the grocery store. How appalling. How fucked. I call it rape. I see and feel it as assault. This is where civilization's at, 2016. It's violent, and its lack of beauty is disgusting and obvious. It's a waste. This shit is happening in the world, I'm bummed to say. But it does not have to be, because society is just in the world, but it is not the world. August 11th, 9:20 p.m., 2016, planet Earth. This is a short poem. Oh, Walt, you're here. My favorite painting is the one of a woman painting. Wildness, nude, in some wooden room, record turns monk at paint splat hands, shapes unknown, form a stance, wrist to hip skin. My favorite painting is this woman painting, Wildness, 2 a.m. This is a Beacon Street poem, Beacon Street facing Boston poem. Sunrise, rose red, pink orange, golden black angled Boston below, the stretch of the sun's bosom glow. I looked in a bird book and for this duck, and it was called the Great Saucer. I really don't know if that's correct. It's S-A-U-C-E-R. Is anybody familiar with that duck? I've never heard, no one's ever heard of that. Okay, well, this is a duck. Ooh. Duck dive, disappear, water flow, reappear. Let's see. Okay, so this will be nice. Charles Olson turns me on. So I found out about him. I was working in a bookshop, and I wanted to know Massachusetts writers, and he is from Worcester or here. And so I read the Human Universe essay, which is really good, and I wanted to read Call Me Ishmael because it wasn't that long, and, you know, you look at the Maximus poems, and it's pretty big, and even Robert Creeley's New Directions selected poems is pretty thick, and getting through it is, you know, you have to learn it like a new language, like Shakespeare. But anyway, I wanted to read Call Me Ishmael, so I had to read Moby Dick. And I've been to the Whaling Museum, and I've seen it in comic book form, but I started to realize that all the things, no one here is in school anymore, but they push books on kids at school so they don't read them. That's like the point, you know, they give them these important books. Like, I mean, a lot of young people know about the book 1984. But if you have to take a test on 1984 the next day, are you going to read it? Or the appendix, which is really interesting part of that book? Probably not. So I wanted to read Moby Dick because I know that it's like something that maybe I could read Call Me Ishmael, and it's not really read. So anyway, I read Moby Dick, and Rosemary told me that I needed to write down immediately what I was thinking. So this is it. Between Moby Dick and Call Me Ishmael, it's woven wonderfully into sub or outer textual patterns, plays on yarns, tales expressing before. Makes me want to move through this world. I already am moving. Everything is. Yeah, going on, the story, the bubbling of the white whale's face, seen from the human on a hunt for a whale for one man. I messed that up. I'll do it again. Yeah, going on, the story, the bubbling of the white whale's face, seen from the human on a hunt of a whale for one man. Moby Dick is an art, forming and engaging any time you. I see it all around and am involved. Myself, Ishmael, what will we do after the hunt? Chase. Okay. And so that's enough of that. Here's a painting. We can pass this around.
Oh, boy.
Also, we should look at Diane De Prima. And I want to read from No Fish Book 3, because I found this book in a trash can in the Brookline Public Library. They throw out so many books, and they're doing it at Sawyer Free Library,
oh,
too.
My God.
They throw books out all the time.
Don't they have a free table or something?
it's darker than that. I mean, they really, if a book isn't popular, they chuck it. But that's only popular for this year. So I guess we should check out all the books. Even if you're not even going to read them, just check out all the books. If you're not going to read all the D.H. Lawrence and the Sawyer Free Library, check it out, because then they'll go through when they're weeding and say, oh, well, somebody check this out. We can't toss it. Yeah. Vincent Farini gets tossed. So, yeah, it's not really cool, but I was a custodian, so I had to take out the trash. And so there was like, they had to go through me. All these books had to go through me. So I just started shoving them in my book bag. And I saw this, the wonderful, I think, really good book is The Selected Poems of Vincent Farini by George Butterick. And it has this black spine. And I was just throwing away books, because I couldn't take all, like, I had to throw Bertram Russell's History of Philosophy in the trash, which is just, like, funny. But I found this book in the trash, so I want to read it, read something from it. I also found it, if you ever find a Vincent book, it's probably signed. And if you use bookstores, mine is signed. I found one in Maine. It's signed. And this one in the trash was signed by Vincent on the day that I found it. But in 1984, he signed it. So this book has really amazing, this dream section all of to Olson. So if you're into Olson, I would read that. But I want to read this. It's Correspondences. The slave and the master have one habit. Oh, excuse me.
Habitat.
It's habitat. Thank you. let me see if I can find it again. The slave and the master have one habitat. Who swap places, now you know where you're at. And I think there's a poem for Paul in here. Okay, I want to read some more things, and then I don't really know how long I've been doing it, been up here, but not really that long. Okay.
Cool.
Cool. I have a really funny, maybe you all are interested in Charles Olson, so this is a kind of funny thing, like I'll read. It's just a story. Night, near mid, 11:33 p.m., same day as the other side. Got a view of the moon as I took out the trash of the restaurant today. The open air is a break. I sat in the darkness behind the restaurant tonight, in the alley where the old kegs are stacked. And the refuse oil, veggie, I think, is stashed in a grease pit box covered in grease splash that has a threatening bill on it from the Department of Homeland Security that reads something like, the unauthorized use of this refuse is a felony and fineable up to $10,000. This refuse belongs to the government and is used so that our country is not dependent on foreign oil. Signed, the Department of Homeland Security. Anyway, this is America, the USSA, 2016, and I'm back there in the dark between the 10-foot wooden fence, the street, light passing through, vertical lines, night lights aglow visible from across the street, The cars pass both ways. The headlights, lights casting shadows on me as I catch a quick break. I was sent out to refill the wood for the pizza oven, and I've decided to get a quick five in. So I'm seated between the wooden fence and where I know the motion sensor light will not sense me. And I sit on a curb back there facing the kegs, watching the night move, and I start thinking about Olson and have a night dream about being in one of his classes at Black Mountain and him laying something down like he does in Call Me Ishmael. Me at a desk and him in some professor's shirt. But since it's Olson and we're in Black Mountain, he's been wearing it for the past 3 days. And I respond with a woo-hoo because that's what I feel when I engage with his art. And then the dream moves to him in that graveyard in Gloucester now, and I see his bones, and I realize that, yeah, I wasn't at Black Mountain, and I wasn't even born. But despite that, Olson not being alive, his art is. And so I tell this to Rosemary when I get home from the job, and we agree, yes, it is, and that it's there for any custodian to pick up or go into, drifter or unhoused or dropout, just as Melville's art is. Example, Rosemary found her copy of Moby Dick in a free box outside of an antique bookshop. Paperback signet. I'll take it. That's the first edition I came onto Shakespeare with, the dramas Hamlet, Lear, Macbeth. So after all that, I go back in, and on the ride home, I hear this mantra, become your dreams, not your nightmares. And I decide to push out my dreams into all the space I move through and stop being passive, stop being afraid, and engage with the space around. Okay, and I really want to read this poem. It's called We Are Rainbow Covered. And I've really been wanting to read this so bad, like, so it's a longer poem. We are rainbow covered, not bound to a black and white shroud, but in the gut, colors, teeming, woven in a cosmic color blast, coastal rock, iridescent grass, rainbow covered skin. The ones on the island are my sisters, brothers, lovers, even from here, Greensboro, September 16th, 2016, full moon, on Russian, the human image of peace, face, soul fury, our soul connects with alley tree, rooted on Granite City, just off the path, come to shore, to love, I'll share with my fellow creation creatures, turning whale, a Turkish hair flip, a Jamaican kiss. Here's a backyard banana. There's the common. I don't want that private. I cry when I see the maps that arrive at a flat plane. Deflation of mental space. Can't compass the rainbow. It won't be good for the king's scheme. It won't be black and white. Then pick a team. Go back to work. Ditch dig your friends. No eye contact. It's mandala is too much. I've deracialized. I don't specialize or identify American. I have no use. There is no beauty there. There it goes, though, in the shared space of the rainbow, and the cosmic puff and the circling hold nothing. Let go of the cage. There's no fence there. It's open. If you open your head, allow your eyes to see, body to love, and soul to live in rainbow wind.
Boy.
Yeah.
Why don't we get a little bit of Walt from the, randomly from the best introduction ever to the 1855 edition of Leaves of Grass. It's so good. This men and women and the earth and all upon it are simply to be taken as they are, and the investigation of their past and present and future shall be unintermitted and shall be done with perfect candor. This one's for Vincent Farini. A trick to the push-up, breath. I watered her seeds, sprouts, green, tiny beings, the wind symphonies, the lover's love, light or dark. Where the limbics for the paradise and the flood, pouring out whatever space we become, the far-off stars and the flick of the flea, grass up from the bone bloods. I mean, excuse me, grass up. from the blood bones. So. Oh, I want to do this one. Maybe, okay, so my mother really likes this poem, so I'll read it. Chowder, scoop, teeth clamp, pop, sand. Okay.
Do it again.
Okay. Chowder, scoop, teeth clamp, pop, sand. Clam chowder, scoop, teeth clamp, pop, sand. This is like a, I like this poem. And we're closing out the year. So it's called Lunas. Poetry equals science of relationships. Nora Mitrani, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but there's a great book called Surrealist Women, edited by Penelope Rosemont. And it's so good. Really good book. So poetry equals science of relationships. One, tarot. Temperance reversed, King of Cups, Ace of Cups, 8:35 p.m., January 12th, 2017, full moon, beside spice, sleeping black cat, a candle in green glass, Greensboro, North American South, moon framed in window, wind slowly open tonight, desire springs winter's love. 2. Full moon at 6:32 a.m. at height of night, just leaving dream. Darkly enter kitchen, moonlit stillness, window framed, peep at, up, through, and zong! Whoosh! There she is at the edge of night. Moon epically illuminates subtleties of her zone. First full moon, 2017. I think that Paul should read, and then I could maybe, I could read more. I feel like I'm missing something that I wanted to share. Okay, how about a dream? No. Oh, I wrote this today, so this will be my last thing, I guess. And then if I want, if you guys want more stuff, I can read later. This is, I really like books, Biblion Philos, and there's a really, the Ralph Maud Library is amazing and has a lot of books that were illegal and people went to jail for. There's a lot of books that the FBI seized. There's 5 issues of Fuck You in there. There's really good books in that place. So every time I go in there, I go in there every Wednesday, and I can just find books that are, you're not going to find in a public library, but it's a public library special collection. So there's a great book that Dave Rich, we had a class and we read really good stuff, and Jerome Rothenberg came up, but I just didn't know it. I didn't know how important it was, but I was in the Olson Library and I found this book called The Revolution of the Word, and it's amazing and it's great, and you get the poetics of the poet before he lays down the poem. It's a great anthology. But I was just I just came up with this today, and I really haven't done anything like this before, so this is like fresh from today. Poetry's a catch. Okay, poetry's a catch from the net of your percept. Something caught in life and let go or killed. What's brought back into life from the ocean of moments. Breathing space, sensing, sense, sing. Poem, a life from back before the head. Yeah. Thank you.
You did it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, congrats. Good reading. So most everybody in this room knows the next guy. He moved back here a few months ago from being long away, and we're really happy to have him as a part of the Writer Center and is on our board as well, which we're very happy about, to have somebody with Paul's experience. And we even have Joe here too, which is like amazing to have the Cultrera brothers in town together. So happy to see both of them. I was looking around like 2 weeks ago for this because I knew Paul was coming and I wanted to refresh my memory with of this book, and I couldn't find it. But I came in here today and I just saw it and pulled it off the shelf. So I'm very. I want to just read a poem from Groundwater, which was published in 78. And I don't know if this one was in Fred's magazine or not, Paul, the first one, In and Out Song number one, but that's what I'm going to read, and then Paul's going to do his thing. That you come into it crying and sucking, in and out, you, the dynamic, is a matter of world replacing mother, or a bigger womb is what you get into, is what you come out of, a new voice, and build a house. In and Out Song number one, February 1st, 1972, Paul Cultrera.
Thank you for not reading the poem I was going to read from that book. That would have been redundant. Okay, so I'm sort of going to try to pick up where I left off about 40 years ago. Some of you know me from things I've written, and some of you know me from food I sold to you. My former life here, for a long time, I managed the Cape Ann Food Co-op, which none of my fault, it doesn't exist anymore. It was doing well when I left. But I left in 1990, and I've been out west. I've been in Albuquerque and in Sacramento ever since, mostly in Sacramento for about 20 years. And actually, just about a year ago, November 18th at 5:30 p.m., I retired. And I recommend retirement to anybody who can pull it off. It's just, you know, we all work way too much, and, you know, work seems to be the center of our lives, and it really shouldn't be. Anyway, when I left, or actually when I started working at the co-op is when I sort of, the writing kind of tailed off. And blame this on Henry. Henry asked me to do this reading, and I said, what the hell am I going to read? I've been writing business plans and putting complicated spreadsheets together for the past 20 years. What am I going to read? So, you know, I started digging into a lot of old stuff, and I came across this thing I've totally forgotten. When I left the co-op, some of you probably know Josh and Babette Brackett, and they're great people, and now they've passed over to the other side. And when I left the co-op, Josh was on the board of directors. And I totally forgot about this, but I found this in a box. There was this book that he and Babette gave me when I left. It was a book called Traveling at Home by Wendell Berry. Yeah. And he put this little inscription in it. And the inscription was, I want to get it right here. It's very brief. It says, remember when you used to be a poet before we got to you? Which kind of summed it up. I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, I became a grocer. And it was, you know, I was all involved with words and language, and then all of a sudden I sort of got involved with food and numbers. I mean, and it was like, you know, at first the co-op was about food, and then as I got deeper and deeper into it for years, it became all this financial analysis and stuff, and it was just looking at numbers as a different type of language. Unfortunately, the whole writing part kind of went away. So anyway, I want to start off by reading a few things by some people who, back when I was writing a lot, had a big influence on me. There were three people when I was here in Gloucester that were kind of part of the conversation that my writing was about. And they are Linda Parker, who later changed her name to Linda Crane, Roby Liscombe, who grew up in Gloucester but moved away and actually found a few poems of mine in Fred Buck's Bizarre magazine years ago and then published Groundwater in another book called Journey. And Roby is just an amazing poet. Like me, he has sort of stopped, he doesn't write a whole lot anymore, but we do still correspond. And then the third person is Hartley Ferguson, who I was honored to be married to for a number of years, and now we're not married anymore, but we're still very close friends. And so there was kind of, back in the 70s when I was doing a lot of writing, a lot of the writing that I was doing was sort of almost a conversation or correspondence between those three people and myself. So I want to read a few things by those people first to kind of set a context. And the first one I'm going to read is by Linda. And Linda, every once in a while, you know, Linda had a number of books published. And she also, every once in a while, would give Hartley and I, when we were together back in those days, folders full of poems. And you probably, you know, some of you probably got the same ones. And I was just doing this archaeological sort of dig to find stuff to bring here tonight. And I came upon one that I'd completely forgotten about. And it's called Landscape for Peter. And I assume it's Peter Anastas because there are these references to Cyprus and Aristotle and Greece. And and today is Peter's birthday. So I wanted to dedicate, I wanted to read this. Did you ever receive this poem, Peter?
I think I did.
Okay.
I think I have.
So I'm gonna try and read this. I can't attempt to be Linda. Linda was just an amazing human. A lot of you probably knew her. She was a great writer. She was a great polarity therapist. She was a great shamanic practitioner. She was, she founded and was the Cape Ann Seafood Company. I remember she, seaweed, not seafood, seaweed company. She used to go diving off of the Dog Bar breakwater in the middle of the winter, you know, for kelp, you know. Anyway, here's a poem, Landscape for Peter. The face of creation is a garden. Your face is a garden of Cypriot iris, reeds and palm, that has let go of Aristotle, the cat spirit, let go to nature, God's face. Your face is free as the first of any flower to appear. Yeah. And if that wasn't for Peter, I think it actually, you know, should be for Peter.
I remember that.
This next one is from a book called Seabirds, which I believe is on the shelf here. I think Henry pulled a poem out one day at one of our meetings. This was actually published by Roby Liscombe. It's called P's Winding Sheet, and it's for Kemp. I don't know who P is. I don't know who Kemp was.
Kemp was an Olson scholar that used to come to work in Gloucester.
Okay.
He and Linda became friends.
Okay. Well, this is P's Winding Sheet for Kemp. Because the glasswort tinges, and isn't because the heron startles and cries in the reeds and oak, and also not a bird is voiceless because of the sunlight and cold, because the blood, because nothing here is not marshland, because only this is only marshland, weaving and unweaving, because power is extreme here, and not at all, and with no mention of power, because the tide is nearly high in this marshland. We do this simply, do this extremely well, including everything as if you and I were real and nothing remains behind. This next poem by Linda is called Lhasa. It was just published as a single poem. And it's dedicated to Steve and John. And that was Steve Lulebeck and John Giglio. And Garrett certainly knows John Giglio, although he pronounces it Giglio. But the correct Italian pronunciation is Giglio. And Giglio means lily. And these were two good friends of Linda, Steve Lulebeck and John Giglio Lily. So this is the poem. And it starts off with a quote. It says, they look like flowers in the distance. The white mountains issue rivers that spring up here in Gloucester like lilies. Giglio and Lilium paradoxum grow only at the northernmost point of the Tsangpo River, like flowers, like mountains lily, looks like the tide bubbling up from under winter salt marsh ice. like flowers in the distance. They look like mountains, like the river from Katahdin running underground to spring up lilies at the end of Dog Bar Breakwater at Gloucester. And at the end of this little book, there's a nice little photo of Dog Bar Breakwater in Gloucester. The last thing I want to read by Linda is very short, and it kind of sums up a lot. It's called Poetry, and it's in parentheses, poetry. One's whole self cast out like a net to haul in Lord knows what. So the next two are from Roby Liscom. As I said, Roby grew up in Gloucester and then moved on. I think he went to Tufts. He told me that he went to Tufts because Peter told him it was a good school. So he went to Tufts and then he moved on, and he was living in Chicago when I first connected with him. And he had a small press. He literally had a hand letter press that, you know, he was like, typeset every little letter in it, called the Fathom Press. And this was back in the 70s and 80s. And he and his wife, Kathy, spent a lot of time in Taiwan and China. They were both studies of Buddhism. And this book, Words and Food, you know, if I had to, you know, go to my grave with only... Well, I'm not going to my... I don't know. I guess take it with me. Yeah. I'd take this book. It's just a beautiful book. It's very beautifully done, and the writing kind of sums up a lot for me. At the beginning of it, he included this fortune slip that was thrown at the Cloudlight Temple, Five Fingers Mountain, June 6, 1980. And this fortune slip read, and I believe it's probably this in calligraphy, but I don't read... that, so I don't know, but said, the most important things are words and food. If you don't cherish these, how can you perform the rites? Not only will you be unable to call down blessings, but also your emolument will be decreased. And maybe our president should pay attention to that and his emoluments. Anyway, I'm going to read just two very brief poems by Roby in this book. Roby used to, you know, send, you know, postcards and things like this with his poems on it to us. This one is called Peripheral Vision. Throw the words that we feed on away. This is how we take care in the dark. Look to the sky to know if the ground has been cleared. Look next to what you would see to see. And this other one is called Gradual. 10 years conversation around this round oak table, like a tree on the hillside, we hold together a little piece of world. And then I'm going to read something by Hartley Ferguson. Some of you may know Hartley. She lived in Gloucester for a long time. She's now in Bilbao, in the Basque Country. And, you know, interestingly enough, Bilbao is the city where the first load of salted cod went from Gloucester too. Wow. And I remember reading the word Bilbao in a Maximus poem, and not knowing what Bilbao was, but just the sound of the word Bilbao, it was like, wow, that's amazing. And then I went to visit Hartley there, and I was like, wait a minute, that's where I remember this from, this old poem. You know, it's funny how, you know, you live long enough and your memories and your days get all mixed up. Anyway, Peter, back, this was what, 1976 or 7, Dogtown College. Anyone remember Dogtown College? Well, Dogtown College was an experimental experience here in Gloucester. Various people like Peter, Linda taught a course. I can't remember what Linda's course was. I just remember going to it. Peter had a meeting over at and the building next to the laundromat over here in East Gloucester Square. I don't know what's there now. And it was called The Writer's Voice. And it was a bunch of people who would just sit around and share their writing. And it was the first time I'd ever done anything like that. And Hartley was part of that group. And Hartley wrote a number of poems, but I just picked this one. It's called Moraine. And it's in like six parts, but I'm just going to read it all through. Moraine, like somebody's last name, carved into Dogtown cornerstone. But we could get lost here anyway. Boulders marked the place. The cold went no further. Plant, the beans, the corn, the stalks, around this definition, moraine, a limit, boundary, and so we speak. Of possibilities, everything surfaces here. Each boulder dropped or scraped up out, landlocked in the melt. Lear raging on the Dogtown moor, and the one called Gloucester trying to see. Glacier dropped, solstice corner, stone I climb, granite. Here where the cold went no further, here we mark our lives. Since Garrett is here, and with your permission, I will read one of your poems. The first line of this poem became my mantra in all my years in the food business. You know, running food cooperatives, natural food stores, you meet a lot of great people, and you also meet a lot of people who get a little neurotic about food. A lot of various diets. I don't want to offend any vegans or vegetarians or raw foodists or paleo dietists who are here. They're all fine, but when you run a store, they drive you fucking crazy. Anyway, the name of this poem is Weed Udana, and the first line became my mantra for years. It says, food is not the enemy. Certainly food is not the enemy. For the third time, and now most, and I make it most true, and to be held in the refrigerated water of flow of mind, food is not the enemy. Only if life is held to be the enemy can food be so conceived, and that life is the enemy is a burning distraction, conceived by life itself as part of its gag, but no one has to be muzzled. And this not to say that other boring, long-known half-kernel that we are the enemy, because there is an enemy, and it's no good pretending it's some hypothetical you or us. Or a weed. What is a weed? A dirty word to be abolished as we re-inhabit Adam's old garden and softly or lovingly, roughly caress the genitals of God and goddess, walk in the beauty of morning and evening rubefaction forever. A weed is nowhere, or we are all weeds, all woad, all meant to be eaten, as I carelessly, weeding one noon, pulled up by mistake coriander, blessed it for food the next day, rice with cilantro. So many friends to play with we have. Weeds are what we smoke, we eat, we work with, what we are, how we joyously do and are done. And I don't know how many times I quoted food is not the enemy to people through my 30-something career in co-ops whenever they would come up and tell me that, oh, you shouldn't eat that, and it's got too many calories. And it probably inspired me to write this little epigraph or whatever, I don't know what you call it. At the top of the food chain are found the neuroses. They eat people. Okay, so now I'm going to move on to some things that I wrote. But because we're in Vincent's house, I found this thing that I forgot I'd written. I guess I wrote it when I was in Albuquerque in probably 1990 or so. And I remember... not so much when I was in Gloucester, but when I left Gloucester and I would come back to visit, I would always check in with Vincent, and he'd sort of sit me down over there and give me, you know, advice for my life. I'm not sure I ever followed it, but it was probably just good advice. I don't know. Anyway, I wrote this thing called Farini's Lighthouse Keeping. This lighthouse walks, it talks, it crawls in its ear like it lands in our bellies, who catch its javelin bolts right in the guts, where they do the most good. The acupuncture compass needle, the little iron shaft sparking off from the friction of his hair, bristling from its rubbing the world, his magic lantern. So, Henry mentioned that book Groundwater, and I wrote most of that stuff back in the early 70s and mid-70s, and most of the book, and I read it now, and I find it kind of hard to actually relate to it, but it was mostly about, trying to find my way, you know, when you're in your early 20s, trying to figure out who you are and where you came from and what you're doing. And the title poem, I think the title poem came late in the process, but because it was never really conceived as a book, it just sort of came together. But anyway, the title poem is Groundwater. Groundwater, water from a rock, the earth, a rock full of it, as real as symbol, double play, Cancer to Capricorn, the poles, digging a hole to China in the backyard, groundwater, all the way, home down 128. I guess I was living in Gloucester at the time when I wrote that, because coming down 128, and I remember seeing groundwater for the first time. I took geology in college, and I remember like skipping all the classes. But as you drive down 128, sometimes you will just see through the granite. There's just groundwater pouring through it, you know, like 10 feet down or so from the top of the ledge. That's just water coming through. I guess everyone, you know, I just probably assume everyone knows that. I just didn't. A lot of the poems in this book were sort of about my family or my parents, my grandparents. This one is about my two grandparents who I never knew, my grandfathers. My paternal grandfather came over from Sicily. I'm like 100% Sicilian, so don't turn your back. He came over to the United States, and he went back to Sicily, then he came back again. He had my father with my grandmother, and then he went back to Sicily when my father was like 12 or so, and never came back again. So I never knew him. And then my mother's father died a few months actually before my mother was born. He was in an accident. He was riding a bicycle, and someone hit him ran into him on a motorcycle. But I grew up in the house that my maternal grandfather built, and it's still there. My brother still lives there. So I never knew my father's family very much because they were all still over in Sicily, except for a few of them that lived in Connecticut. And after I got out of college, I decided to go visit my relatives in Sicily. And it was an amazing experience. None of them spoke English. They all spoke pretty much Sicilian dialect, and I spoke a little bit of it. But it took me a while to figure out what was going on, but they just wrapped me in these stories of my grandfather, who I learned while I was there that I was very much like, but because I never knew that. So, you know, they put me up in his bedroom, and, you know, I slept there, and it was right over where the mule stall, you know, it was like bedroom, and then down below there was the mule, and you hear the mule get up in the morning. But anyway, this was back in 1973. So this one starts off with the word walking. And, you know, I read Willie's thing on Enduring Gloucester a little while about walking around Gloucester, and then Peter's book, Walker in the Cities, and, you know, it's like all this walking. Walking is the best exercise, for sure. So this one goes like this. Walking in your streets, I am walking on your bones. Walking in your garden, walking in your dreams. In the cemetery, the picture in your grave I stare at, but know you better in the garden. They told me that you carried my picture with you always, and I don't remember where I was when they told me you were dead, but I remember sitting in the first seat of the last row in that first grade classroom thinking that my grandfather was dead, and that was maybe the first time that I'd ever even thought of you at all. Later, I became hungry for pictures of you. I made it to Sicily, and in your bedroom I waited, and you didn't keep me waiting. I knew you, and now, away from here, in this my other unseen grandfather's house, I look for you in the mirror, and I'm not disappointed when I know that if you are dead, then how am I alive? By the lay of the trees in the garden and the aqueducts there, I know the olive is the family tree. Sitting in a Siracusa trattoria, eating pasta al forno, not 20 miles from where you were born, left, came back to and died in, I understood the connection, how I am an olive tree of your planting. You made love in my blood, and we carry each other's pictures in our hearts, in your streets, walking, on your bones, in your garden, your dreams, Paolo, figlio di Paolo, e figlio di Paolo. Those last lines, our family is very uncreative in naming people. My grandfather was Paolo, my father was Paolo, I'm Paolo, and figlio means son of. And every time I'd walk down the street in Canacatini Bagni, which is the town where my grandfather lived, people would stop and point to my nose, because evidently I have the same nose as my grandfather, and they'd run through this Paolo, figlio di Paolo, figlio di Paolo. It's kind of nutty. But I learned to love it. It was very nice. Then
sounds like a film I've heard of before.
I don't know which film you're referring to. So then, if
some frame somewhere around here.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know, ask Joe. My brother Joe is the filmmaker, not me. So this next book came out, I think, 1980, 81. And Robey published this, and Hartley actually did the cover drawing. It's based on a some art that's on a wall in a church in Ravenna, Italy. Hartley lived in Ravenna for about a year, and then when we got married, we went to Italy on our honeymoon, and we went there, and she did this little sketch and decided to put it on the cover. This book is kind of a mixture of love poems to Hartley and me trying to figure out what language and words and the world is about. And it starts off with a sort of epigraph saying, "Pulling the nails out of used words to reconstruct my house of the world." Yeah. For about 5 years, I lived out on Halibut Point with a bunch of friends of mine. It was, you know, sort of a group that sort of came and went, but my friend Kevin Fahey and I were there for a long time. And Kevin had an antique restoration business, and I used to help him out sometimes. And mostly he would give me these old chest of drawers and tell me, pull that apart. So I'd be pulling it apart and pulling nails out of these, this wood, and then we would reuse the wood, and it became this metaphor for me, like pulling nails out of used words. And as I was looking through this book and looking through a bunch of the other stuff, I realized that actually the name of this book should have been called Present Participle, because almost all the poems start with present participles. This one is called, Walking. It's not called Walking, it just starts off with the word Walking. Walking in the world, the body and work, the connection in the garden on all fours, weeding, thinking, finding, wisdom spaced as the plants there. This is another one when I'm trying to figure out where words come from. I mean, where do words come from? I mean, you know, I mean, we just have them all the time, but where do the first ones come from? How do people come up with words? Anyway, seeking the moment when grammar might intersect, my hands in the soil and words spring from there. Hartley worked for a while at Para Research. Does Para Research still exist? I don't know. It was a publishing house here in Gloucester, and they published mostly astrological textbooks. And Hartley was a proofreader and editor there. So she would come home, and we inevitably would be talking a lot in astrological terms. I don't claim to be an astrologer, but, you know, I sort of picked a few things up from her. And we would take these walks through Dogtown a lot. And so this one is about a sort of walking through Dogtown, I guess, with an astrological viewpoint. Turning left at Libra, heading into winter, seeking paths through Dogtown, eating our tails. We bring home flowers from and seek. Sink deep into blankets, preserving our harvest. This is another little Dogtown love poem. This I don't know, this might be the best thing I ever wrote, especially because it's so brief. It's called Dogtown Brook. We took a walk in Dogtown and crossed this little brook. I don't know if it's still there. Peter might know if it's still there. So I wrote this poem called Dogtown Brook. It's language, your tongue in my ear. This is another one of these walking poems. This is Hartley, Roby, Linda, and I went to Plum Island along with another visiting poet, Michael Tereshow. And there's this poem, and there's another one I might read later that sort of came out of that day. Walking, seeming, along this road holds us up. The wind holds the birds, motionless, flying into it. Our lives together. And this is the last one in this book. Hartley and I, when we first met, she was living at 38 Fort Square, and I moved in with her for a while, and, you know, our window looked out on the harbor, looked out at 10 Pound Island, and there were always boats coming fishing. Well, there were fishing boats back in those days, lots of them coming in and out. And so this one sort of came from that. These days we've loved how many of the boats gone out and returned, an exact number of fish landed, a measure, or degrees of planetary movement, but we never inhabit the same part of the solar system twice. Every heartbeat changes space our paths spiral in. And I'll read a few others. These next three are kind of going along some of the same territory, I guess, that I was talking about with words. And one thing I did when I lived in Gloucester years ago is I had a big garden out in Lanesville. When I first got here, I went out to garden. I put an ad in the paper asking if anyone had any land in Margie Urkola. I don't know if anyone knows Margie. It was way back there on High Street, and she had this piece of land. I said, yeah, you can garden there. So I went out there, and for years I had this garden. And I bought a rototiller. And, you know, to make some extra money, I was rototilling people's gardens all around Cape Ann. And so as I was rototilling, some of these things would come to me. And without going into it, Garrett probably knows some of the etymology of the word verse. It comes from the word turning, and it's the same word that vertebrae, you know. And I'm not going to go into all of that stuff, but anyway. A lot of there's boustrophedon is a Greek word. It means strophe comes from it, and boost, I believe, is ox, and it meant the ox would go up and down, and, you know, plowing, and that's where some of the derivation of verse comes from. So anyway, here's a brief one. Writing in the earth and on paper plowing, furrows in the skin of the day. This one might have been inspired by Babson's rocks out there in Blacktown with those inscriptions on it. Writing in stone, limited edition, one lasting message. Not to produce literature, but to transmit messages. This last one, closer and closer along the edge of the language, I sharpen as I go, more attentive to and deeper into its growth. Linda and Hartley and I went to a place that Linda called Proportion Hill. Does anyone else? It's right behind your house, Garrett.
That's right.
Is it called Proportion Hill? Because I don't see it on a map anywhere. But
no, she called it that.
Okay, so it's just Linda's way of naming Gloucester. And so we went up to Proportion Hill one night and spent the night sleeping on a rock slab up there. And I wrote this one. From Proportion Hill, stars above and no names. We each find our spots and cease talk. New perspective, no perspective. My back to the rock without language. There came a time when I was like just running out of words, and I was like fed up with words. That's probably why I started in with numbers. But these next, it's actually one poem in three parts, I guess. And it's, as I said it earlier, that day that we spent out at Plum Island, is where this came from. Quantity, how to inhabit each among so many kingbirds, plums, how many people. Each life, each word, how many lives these plums can support, how many questions surrounding these plums. No words. On one side of the road, the five of us pick beech plums, and the birds on the other grub the marsh, equally silent. No names or colors, no art, no inheritance. Only what we can grub out as those birds from the marsh. Plum Island, September 20th, 1980. This next one is called Calendar, and it comes from, the word calendar comes from the Latin word calends, which was the first day of the lunar month, and it was the day in which all debts were supposed to be settled. So the money lenders would set up their bench and, you know, collect their money. So this one's called Calendar. The money lenders divide this continuous movement to serve their interest. New first day of the month, the new moon, the Calends. This next one is just a very simple way of looking at solid land that we walk around on. Breaking her water, Mother Earth. These next are a couple of love poems, and Roby sent me an email a few weeks ago, and he was referring to some experiences in his past, and he referred to them as misdemeanors of love. And I thought, wow, what a great phrase. And these are love poems, and, you know, I'm single, so I guess they must indicate some misdemeanors in my past. This one is called I Come Back from Ohio to the Curve of Your Leg in the Palm of My Hand, This Possibility of Knowing. And this one doesn't have a title. Now you see it, now you don't. That reflection behind your reflection, the shape of your soul hiding and seeking itself, in the darkened cinema of your dreams, a gypsy band plays the soundtrack, the taste of a lost lover's kiss, a satsuma's memory, on the tongue, the tide of joy and sadness, you float on your life raft on the sea of the heart. There was a, I've been coming to some of the open mics, and there was one back in August, and I read this one. And Joshua Scott Fishburne, who is a local poet, and he's also on the board of the Writer Center, told me after the writing that he really liked his poem, so I thought I'd read it in case he was here, but he's not, but I'll read it anyway. And this one and the next couple of them are, the moon plays a big part. I was born in the sign of Cancer, which is ruled by the moon, so I guess that's my excuse. And this one talks about purple loosestrife. You know, when I lived here 30, 40 years ago, there seemed to be lots of purple loosestrife. There seems to be a lot less of it now. I just loved it. But I just realized, I started looking into it now, that it's actually a very invasive species, and it's not good for the marshland. And I don't know if they've tried to eradicate it, or if it just went away, and maybe somebody can tell me. But
in New Hampshire, up on the divide, on the I-95, you see it?
You see it? There's one little strip of it down in Beverly, in the median strip on 128. Along 127, I think it's between Manchester and Beverly Farms, it's a little... I look for it now, and it's in August that you see it, and it's beautiful. But I guess if it's invasive, like many beautiful things, you got to stay away from it, I guess. I don't know.
You could
Anyone,
find it at Halibut Point.
Is some at Halibut Point?
You could go back to Halibut Point. It's there.
Find it there. If you look up the definitions, it's defined as wild perennial. Anyway, so the name of this poem is Wild Perennial. Wild perennial, early August, purple, loosestrife, full moon, tide, pushes into coves, filled with water, filled with purple, roadsides, filled with you, my heart is loosestrife, purple, pink waves, sudden blooms. This next one is called Full Moon. Full moon. The silver light of heaven pours through from the other side of the blue wall of night. By the grace of moonlight, I am filled with the message of your eyes, my heart's tide runs to. This is a California poem, one of the few California poems. It was written at Asilomar Beach, which is in Pacific Grove, just outside of Monterey. It's every year there's an annual organic farmers conference. It's called the Ecological Farmers Conference, and I would go to it every year because it's just a great. As a matter of fact, I'll probably go back in January. It's always the last weekend of January, and I'll probably go back just because the people there are amazing. Last year, I was there, and I met Will Allen, who, you know, I'm sitting at the table talking to this guy, and I mentioned to him that I'm moving back to Gloucester, and he starts going on, hey, well, I was at the Gloucester Writers Center last month, and turned out he was at the Fishtails event, the Writers Resist, and I was there. You know, we're in the same room, and now we're in California anyway. Asilomar is this beautiful conference center, and it's right on the beach. And so this one is called Moonshine. Moonshine. Moonlight surfs the Pacific, lands at my feet, my shoes shined. And this one's about the woman in the moon. It's called, there's no title. It's just playing hide and seek with the woman in the moon. Her faces change. I crave the shadows of the waning. Then her light returns to refind me. And these next two brief ones are food poems. They're sort of word and food poems. When I was at the SAC Co-op, and it was about 10 years ago, they were putting this mural up on the wall, and they wanted some words to go along with it. So I suggested these, and they, even though I was the manager, I was in charge, they still didn't use this. So fuck them, here it is. This one's called Tongue Tied. Tasting food, remembering the earth, balancing its future on the tips of our tongues. I mean, I have the sense that, yeah, I think like that inscription in Robie's book, you know, if you don't pay attention to food, you know, everything's going to go to hell. And, you know, none of us know what food is anymore. It's all this packaged crap. But anyway, and this one, the second one here is a Gloucester food poem. It's called Flounder. Flounder, good-eaten fish that can be used either as a noun or a verb. And this last one I'm going to read is like the most atypical poem I've ever written. You know, for you Olson fans in the audience, you all know that, you know, he always said that form is the extension of content. And, you know, I lived by those words for a long time. But this poem here is content is the extension of form in this one, because I'm reading this because Amanda hip me to the fact that there is an alternative to Guinness. It's called Murphy's. She told me this about a month ago, and this poem is about Guinness. I went to Ireland, I think it was 1997, for a couple of weeks with a friend. And while we were there, I mean, I really loved Ireland. I'm not any very close to Irish, but I became aware that back then Guinness was running this Win a Pub in Ireland contest. I don't know if they're still running it. Do you know anything about it? You had to submit, your first hoop you had to jump through, you had to submit 50 words or less describing why Guinness was, you know, worth drinking or the best stout in the world or whatever. And I thought, well, that'd be fun to win a pub in Ireland, you know, what the hell. At the time, I was hardly making a living, so... So I wrote this thing. It had to be within 50 words. And there's a couple of references for those of you who aren't Irish. I mentioned Kilmainham Jail. Kilmainham, back in 1916, there was the Easter Rebellion, which was, you know, a group of poets, essentially, Patrick Pearse and McDonough, I can't remember their names. They decided that they were going to try and throw off British rule, and they were going to have this uprising in Dublin. And they thought the whole country would follow behind them. Well, they were sadly mistaken. About 5 days later, the British came in and just decimated them. And they started off by writing this thing called the Proclamation of the Irish Republic. And they went out in front of the post office in Dublin and they read it. And people were walking by going, what are these people doing? And then they occupied the post office, and then the post office was bombed and they were killed and whatever. And then Tom Clark, who also is referenced here, was one of the signatories to the Proclamation of the Irish Republic. And he, along with Pearse and all these other poets, were thrown in Kilmainham Jail. And basically, without even a decent trial, they were condemned and executed in Kilmainham Jail. And Kilmainham Jail is just down the road from the Guinness Brewery. And one day we went to the Guinness Brewery, and then we thought, oh, we heard about this place, Kilmainham, so we went there. And it's just an amazing place. I mean, I don't think it's changed much in the last 100 years. And it's you literally can feel the souls of these executed poets there. So anyway, I decided I'd write 50 words or less about that mentioned, at least mentioned the word Guinness. And... it also mentioned sheep shit. And if you go around Ireland outside of the city, you see a lot of sheep shit. I mean, it's just, and it's remarkable how black it is. It's just like, and so anyway, that's all you need to know about this poem. And when I sent it in with this preface to the poem to the judges that said, 50 words or less, the Anti-Blarney Act, if ever there was one. An Irishman needs more than 50 words to tie his shoes. The stream of consciousness has its source in Dublin, St. James Gate, the Guinness Brewery. Without the stout, Bloom's a Buddhist, Molly's tongue-tied, Finnegan ain't worth waking. Okay, so this is the poem. I obviously didn't win the pub. The night... Can anyone here speak in an Irish brogue? No, because it would be better if... It would be better if I could, but I can't. Anyway, the night was black as sheep shit, still as Kilmainham cells, not a drop of Irish in me but for some pints I'd drunk, and the sound of the pipes pouring down my heart deep as the stout, Tom Clark's shadow whispered the secret to me. Guinness in, Blarney out. That may be why I didn't win the pub in Ireland. So thank you.
Well, that's fantastic.